Now, The Decline of America. In his new book, The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America, author George Packer chronicles how some of the basic institutions that Americans have relied on for so many years are in a state of uncomfortable flux, whether it's something as elemental as privacy or as essential as Social Security. So much of what we know and have come to depend on is changing and maybe disappearing forever, leaving so many folks to fight the tides on their own. George Packer is a staff writer for The New Yorker magazine and author of several books. His book, again, is The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America, and he'll be in town next week. And George Packer, welcome. So nice to have you here today.
It's great to be with you.
Well, boil this down for us, George. What exactly is the unwinding, the word that you use in your title here?
Well, in the abstract, it's the end of a deal that used to exist among Americans and among our leaders and the ordinary people, which said if you were willing to work and to educate your kids and to do the things that we expect of citizens, there's a place for you at the table and a place in the sun. You have a role in our society. You're part of the national fabric. And over the past generation, the book begins somewhat but not completely arbitrarily in 1978. A lot of very powerful trends have broken down that deal and, in a sense, torn up the unwritten social contract.
Trends like what, so, George?
I would begin with deindustrialization, and you know, your area knows that as well as most. the end of good blue-collar jobs, the decline of unions, which has gone along with that but also been a political story. The rise of big money in Washington, with lobbying and PACs, the financialization of the economy as Wall Street takes up more and more of our GDP, and the rise of the new right and with a strong anti-government philosophy that has broken down the bipartisanship that used to exist in Washington, and the rise of the information age, which was supposed to replace the old industrial economy, but really never created enough jobs to do it, and has created sort of a new lifestyle and new modes of living, but not a new middle class. So really, this is the story of the hollowing out of the middle class and the age of extreme inequality that we live in today.
So, George, when you unwind, to use your word, and you look at all these trends that you're talking about here, deindustrialization, the decline of unions, and all the rest, just how much trouble are we in as a country these days, at least in your view? What do you see out there?
Well, I should say that my book is not a policy book or
that's true.
A sociological book. It's a series of narratives about Americans in different parts of the country and how their lives have changed and adapted to these upheavals over the past generation. So it's a generation-long history, but it's the history of ordinary people.
And we'll talk about Dean Price and Tammy Thomas and some of the others in just a little bit here, you bet.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're in a lot of trouble, and one sign of it is that we never really recovered from the recession. Which I think could be called a depression in some parts of the country. Every time we go through one of these financial crises or recessions in the business cycle, we come out worse than before. There are fewer jobs. There are fewer good jobs. There is more inequality. Wage stagnation continues. We just don't seem to have the engine of economic growth that could lift us out of a really chronic stagnation that has set in a lot of the country. You know, you don't feel it as much on the coasts or in some of the big cities, but as soon as you leave those, you know, those outposts of finance and tech, you're in a depression. And that's something I found when I traveled around the country to work on the unwinding, that main streets are empty, and all the economic life is in the big box stores up out on the highway. And this is the story of much of America, and I'm sure that in the Kansas City area, people are familiar with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're saying the country is sort of muddling along, and it's not much better than that, you know, really anywhere.
What I see is not just economic stagnation, but the lack of institutional levers to change things, a lack of the ability to pressure, for example, our elected officials or our corporate leaders or our leaders of other institutions. The old arrangements in which business, labor, and government were willing to sit down at the table, so literally, and each one give up some of its perks and priorities in order to come to some common deal that would allow for job creation or for a more fair tax structure. That just doesn't happen anymore. And those institutions have all declined to the point where they all seem lost in a short-term focus and a very narrow sense of self-interest without an idea of a national interest. And so the old cycles that used to lead to better times because we had those functioning institutions, now we don't seem able to pull ourselves out of it. So it's been a long story of the middle class losing out.
Well, this malaise you're describing, this is really concerning because as a longtime political reporter, I've sensed it for a long time, just the disinterest of so many folks in what's happening, you know, in Washington, much less Jefferson City or Topeka or right here in their backyards. You just don't see people engaging on almost any level. And I'm talking about the broad masses of people. And that's been a real concern of mine for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, levels of political participation are well down from their height in the mid-20th century. And that's not just voting in national elections, but going out to the local party meeting.
Yeah.
And in a way, that has to do with how ideological politics have become and how divisive, so that people, you know, no longer feel that there's anything to be gained from working through some local party structure when you know, the paralysis is coming out of Washington. And obviously it takes both parties to have that paralysis, but I do think since the late 70s, it's the right that has moved farther and farther toward the edge and made it harder and harder to solve the basic problems that never seem to get solved year after year.
So do you see a way out, George? I mean, do you see solutions at hand, or do you sort of suspect and have a feel in your gut that maybe this the lack of levers, the malaise, whatever you want to call it, it's destined to continue for a while?
Well, one, you know, I don't know, because I'm a journalist and a writer, not a prognosticator. I don't trust punditry that predicts the future, because I think it's always surprising, and America is always surprising, and we've surprised ourselves and the world so many times in the past, so we should never be counted out. I think one view is that we're in a long-term imperial decline, that we were the great world power emerging after World War II. We had a fairly free field for economic activity. There was not much competition around the world. We had, you know, this hugely supreme military, especially after the fall of the Soviet Union. And all of this is sort of part of the natural life cycle of an empire. But I think it's not such a cataclysmic or, you know, Roman Empire level of decline. I think it's a political and social problem that could be changed by a new politics, new ideas, new people in leadership. And here we get to the characters in my book. But, you know, when I'm talking to you about these big trends, of course, it's pretty dismal. When I'm talking to Dean Price, who's an entrepreneur in the tobacco textile belt of North Carolina.
An old tobacco farmer, right.
Came out of tobacco stock. Those industries declined. He set up a chain of truck stops, gas and fast food, but found it hard to compete with multinational oil companies and Walmart, and ended up shifting over to biodiesel, making fuel out of canola oil or waste restaurant oil. And it turns out that, too, is a very tough economic battle, but he has stuck with it, with the idea that this is going to create a renaissance in the rather depressed countryside of rural North Carolina, and he has a almost religious vision of this. And when I'm with someone like Dean driving around North Carolina, it's impossible to feel hopeless because he has so much spunk and resilience and faith.
Mm-hmm.
Or take the other character you mentioned, Tammy Thomas, from Youngstown, Ohio.
An Ohio factory worker, right.
Yeah, she had one of the last factory jobs in the midst of a death spiral. I mean, Youngstown was Detroit in fast motion. And when that job was sent to Mexico about 7 or 8 years ago, she was in her 40s and had no way to support herself. And she remade herself into a community organizer. And when I met her, she was training local people, her neighbors in Youngstown, to try to get the federal government to provide money to tear down vacant housing, which is one of the biggest problems there. So the story of so many people in the book is of people coming to an awareness of the larger forces that are shaping their lives and their communities and actually ceasing to be passive and becoming actors to try to shape their own destiny. And that's an American story, and it's a hopeful mm-hmm. story.
George Packer is our guest. Again, he's a staff writer for The New Yorker. His new book, The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America, it's now out in paperback. And I should point out that George will be in town. He'll be speaking at 7 o'clock on Thursday evening, a week from this Thursday, April 10th. He'll be at Unity Temple on the Country Club Plaza. To grab a ticket, call Rainy Day Books in Fairway, that number, 913-384-3126. That's George Packer, 7 o'clock on Thursday, April 10th. A week from this Thursday at Unity Temple on the Plaza. And we're wondering what you think of this notion that the country is going through an unwinding, and what are your concerns about the future of America as you see it from your vantage point? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. Our Twitter address, at KCUR UpToDate. Our guest today, again, George Packer, who won the National Book Award for this book, rave reviews for The Unwinding. George, how did you find these folks, Dean Price, Tammy Thomas, that sort of form that give this book the ballast that it has? You could have picked, you know, millions of people. How did you wind up with Dean Price and Tammy Thomas?
Yeah, there is a whole sea of people out there. But, you know, it turns out that the number of people who whose lives would allow me to tell the story I wanted to tell, you know, who've been part of the history that we've been talking about, and who came from the parts of the country or from the backgrounds I was interested in. Tammy Thomas comes from the Rust Belt. Dean Price comes from rural America. Jeff Connaughton, a career Washington operative. He, you know, represents the world
yes.
inside Washington, the revolving door. Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal and a billionaire tech investor, you know, he introduced me to Silicon Valley. So I wanted a representative array of people that would allow me to get at those big trends that we talked about. But I also needed people who were willing to talk to me and to let me hang out. This was not a matter of parachuting in and doing a one-hour interview. This was weeks and months of hanging out, driving around, staying at their houses, eating dinner with them, and getting inside their lives so that I could tell the story as close to their point of view as possible. And Dean and I met while working on a New Yorker piece about Obama's first year in office.
Mm-hmm.
And I met because I asked people, do you know an interesting woman in the Rust Belt? It's kind of a crazy question. But I talked to a few people in Ohio and elsewhere, and the name Tammy Thomas came up a couple of times. I went out there to meet her, really didn't know anything about her except that she'd been a factory worker and was now a community organizer. She turned out to be far more interesting, inspiring. Her life was both harder and more hopeful than I could have imagined. So in some ways it was luck, but also the luck of kind of knowing what you're looking for.
You know, I was so intrigued, you know, George, by what you said a few minutes ago about sort of the contrast between the juxtaposition between these macro trends that you're describing, the deindustrialization of the country, the downfall of unions, big money in Washington. And yet when you sit down with folks who are being impacted by this stuff, Dean Price and Tammy Thomas, you sort of come away with a more optimistic view that these are folks who are able to sort of, you know, as you said, disengage from passivity and reengage in new ways. And that's so American. And that's really at the essence of so much of what you're writing here.
I think, you know, one of the strongest strains of American life is individualism. In fact, it may be too strong. We may count too much on ourselves and not understand that we're part of this larger society, but it is powerful. And in a time like this, where these older structures no longer work, people really do fall back on themselves and their own resources, if they have them. And I mean inner resources as well as outer. And that's an exciting thing to see, people becoming more conscious, trying new things. There's an entrepreneurial quality to a lot of the people in the book because they have to sort of improvise and invent new ways to make a living, new ways to live. We haven't mentioned that there's also 10 profiles of celebrities in the book who have shaped the culture from the top that these other people are living in. From politics, there's Newt Gingrich. From entertainment, Oprah Winfrey. From business, Sam Walton. And so the reader, while following the lives of Dean, Tammy, Jeff, and others, encounters the stories of some of the best-known people in order to understand how this great inequality has emerged and how it's shaped our lives.
And a lot of these folks don't come off looking too well, including Oprah, George. Why not?
Well, you know, I admire her for bringing, you know, books and ideas into people's living rooms and making people more tolerant and open-minded. I think that's her real achievement. But she also has this, and it's a very American philosophy, this idea that, you know, really all you need is positive thinking and to feel good about yourself and to get your soul right with the universe and good things will happen to you. Well, good things have happened to her, as she never ceases to remind us, but her audience, all through the years of her show, have probably had more and more trouble. And it almost becomes a matter of blaming people for not ending up like Oprah, because there's no random suffering. Everything in the universe has a purpose, and that's her philosophy. It's also the philosophy of Dean Price. You know, he has a kind of self-help guru from the early 20th century, Napoleon Hill, as his guide. And a lot of Americans, especially at times like this, when the normal paths of upward mobility seem blocked, turn to a kind of magical thinking, which is a sort of spiritual lottery. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if only I think the right thoughts, I'm going to make it. Of course, hard work is also necessary. But there are so many obstacles. For example, the Hartzell family from Tampa are uneducated, blue-collar people who are drowning. A family of four, two parents, two kids. They love each other. They've stuck together. There's no drinking. There's no drugs. There's no crime. But they are drowning because our economy has no use for them. And that's something that the philosophy of positive thinking simply doesn't allow for. And so that's where I become critical of Oprah.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here again. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You know, one thing, again, for the sake of context here, George, we haven't really talked about either, is this idea that you point out very early on in this book that unwindings have happened before multiple times during the arc of American history. What are some of the other unwinding sort of periods this country has been through that you talk about here?
I think the first happened right after we became a republic, when the founders' idea of this kind of heavenly republic that looked a little bit like Athens and a little bit like Rome turned out to be much more like a flea market, you know, with, you know, this very noisy, quarrelsome democracy and a really rowdy spirit of capitalism. And yet that shook itself out into sort of the 19th century idea of the free individual and the Horatio Alger story. Mm-hmm. Then we had a civil war in which over 500,000 Americans were killed and the country nearly became two countries. That resolved itself bloodily into a much more unified country, although the problems of race remained and continue to haunt us. The stock market crash of 29 and the Great Depression led to many of the institutions and policies that are part of what I call the Roosevelt Republic, which I think has given way to the unwinding. Those are the things that were part of that deal I mentioned at the top of the interview and that have begun to disappear. So we do you know, find ways to cohere again after we fly apart. And that's why I would never count us out. We are a very adaptive and resourceful people.
George Packer is our guest. He'll be in town next week. His book, The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America, now out in paperback. Joe from Lenexa. Joe, you're on with George Packer. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just going to ask if the author feels America is unique in these qualities. You know, are we unique in a way relative to the entrepreneurial spirit and our ability to bounce back that is different than other democracies like Canada or the UK or Germany?
I think the big difference is our individualism. We just don't trust government and, you know, far away big entities the way Europeans and Canadians are more likely to. We have a frontier spirit that, of course, Canada has too, but just not nearly as strongly. And that has both sustained us at times when government fails, and it also prevents us, I think, from finding ways of collective action and collective solutions. And at times of crisis like the Depression, people were willing to put their faith in government, and I think it responded by solving some problems, and the same with World War II. Today, faith in government is at an all-time low, and I think that's where we get into a vicious circle where we don't believe in government, and therefore government disappoints us because we don't make it work, and that continues the spiral downward. I think that's a different thing from what you find in Europe, and I think the flip side of it is we are more willing to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and to be resourceful, independent-minded than people in other Western democracies.
Could I ask a follow-up question?
Go quickly, Joe. Sure.
You asked earlier if we felt like America was unwinding, and the one difference I think between the World War II generation that you just gave the example of and a distrust for government is what's now being called the one percenters and the consolidation of power and money at the upper end of the spectrum. And I get the impression an unwillingness of the common folk in America today to make sacrifice like our forefathers did in World War II.
Joe, I appreciate your comments. Thank you.
I couldn't agree more. And the fact that we now have the nakedness of billionaires flooding elections with money and doing it, you know, with the blessing of the Supreme Court and with most of our politicians kind of winking at it, shows you that, the idea that we have a one man or one woman, one vote democracy and that everyone's voice is equal, it's made a mockery of every day by what goes on in Washington and in state houses around the country.
And George, you're very pointed in this book. You say that political parties themselves are very much responsible for the rapid decline in values in this country. And why is that?
Well, you know, one of the portraits is of Newt Gingrich. And the reason I made him the representative of politics in this country is because I think more than any other political figure, he has created the toxic atmosphere that we now are used to and live with every day. Mm-hmm. He handed out cassettes and printouts of vocabulary for candidates to use on the campaign trail that made it impossible to work with the other side, that demonized the opponent into an enemy whose values were un-American. Mm-hmm. And that was a very effective way of getting candidates elected, but it was also an effective way of making sure that Congress couldn't function.
Yeah.
And today, you know, it's like the first person who uses mustard gas is unleashing a hellish weapon that everyone else is then going to resort to. And that's what we have in our politics today. And so it's made it very difficult for anyone to go to Washington and do anything constructive.
I want to grab a call here from Rick from up in Atchison. Rick, good morning.
Good morning. George, I've been reading your book, and I've found it helpful, enlightening, and frustrating as well. I teach economics, and one of the things that's become very clear to me in recent years is that we really don't have a system to pay dignity wages to people, especially with the direction both technology is going and the direction we're taking our technology in. And you just see the growth to the lowest 20% with less real income and so on. So do you see any hope in this direction that we can come up with a new system for paying wages that are dignity wages sometime in the future?
I got about 30 seconds left, George. I got to cut Rick off.
I think that's a crucial. Yeah, that's a crucial question.
Mm-hmm.
It's partly globalization technology. It's partly politics. And one political answer is a higher minimum wage, which seems to be catching fire in some of the states around the country, if not in Washington. And I think if we have solutions, they're more likely to come from local areas and states where there's more creativity than in Washington, which seems completely paralyzed today.
Again, you can see and hear George Packer at 7 o'clock on Thursday evening. That's a week from this Thursday, April 10th, at Unity Temple on the Plaza. To grab a seat, call Rainy Day Books in Fairway, 913-384-3126. George, a great half hour, very enlightening. We sure appreciate your time today.
It was my pleasure.
That's George Packer again, his new book, The Unwinding, An Inner History of the New America.